Attention listeners, mark your calendars for Colorado Gives Day on December 10th. Support AfterSight and give to the causes you care about. Go to coloradogivesday.org/organizations/AfterSight between now and December 10th to make your donation.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener, read by Christy McGowan, featuring articles from Colorado Gardener. Proverb update. It's actually better to be a gardener in the garden. By John Hershey. And this is from Colorado Gardener, Harvest 2023 edition. Lately, it has become trendy among certain influencers to quote this pithy aphorism. It is better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. Supposedly, it's a Chinese proverb, but it sounds like the kind of fake saying used to lend credence to opinions that, without the imprimatur of ancient wisdom, might need to be thought through. Most websites featuring this adage don't explain its origins, but will gladly sell you a t-shirt emblazoned with it. I guess the point is, we must prepare for danger to live in peace. That's profound and all, but why do these people have to barge into the garden with their metaphors? I have watering to do. I don't have time to argue about whether we should be doing each other's jobs. Let's stay in our lanes, bro. I actually agree with the second part of the proverb. As a gardener, I wouldn't last 10 minutes on the front lines. If I saw a trench, I would plant potatoes in it. And if I were ordered to take over territory, I would put down layers of cardboard and compost. But are the skills of war any more useful in a garden? Unfortunately, the answer is not metaphorical. People have been literally acting like warriors in the garden for decades. The chemical weapons of World War I were modified into pesticides and are now banned on battlefields, but, oddly, not in gardens. And ingredients of the bombs made for the next war became the synthetic fertilizers that turned gardeners' fingers blue through the 20th century. When we brought weapons into the garden, we brought the mindset, too. Nature is the enemy we conquered to carve out the garden. But it's counterattacking with insects and weeds. So weekend warriors spring into action. Another bit of ancient wisdom from the Bible urges us to beat our swords into plowshares. That's a fine sentiment. But it's really the same attitude, adapting weapons to use against nature in the garden. It's nice that we're not stabbing each other anymore, but plows are still sharp, pointy things that do to the living soil what swords did to enemy troops. Warfare in the garden, as elsewhere, degrades the land and damages the collateral population. Tilling harms the soil structure, and chemicals kill its beneficial biology. But if we don't think of it as a battle, we don't have to destroy the garden in order to save it. Some gardeners have been showing us how to grow in peaceful cooperation with nature. Beyond organic, this method of keeping soil undisturbed and covered with organic matter goes by various names. No-till, lasagna, regenerative. I call it judo gardening. Judo means the gentle way. In judo, you turn your opponent's strength to your advantage, achieving a favorable position with maximum efficiency and minimal effort. You had me at minimal effort. These concepts are perfect for the garden. Without all the rototilling and spraying, the healthy ecosystem of a deep mulched garden is strong enough to fend off most pests. Those that remain can become our allies. If we don't demand total victory, we can turn the strength of even ruthless foes like aphids and bindweed to our benefit. Aphids don't actually cause much damage to plants, but they attract beneficial insects that feast on the real enemies, like parasitic wasps, who might go after the grasshoppers that have taken my big kale patch down to the studs. Bindweed's strength is its huge biomass, which we can carefully compost to capture the soil nutrients. Sure, some might survive the process, but there's no way to eradicate it anyway, and our deep mulch will weaken it. If we're going to bring the warrior ethos into the garden, let's base it on a real Asian tradition of martial arts. Judo gardening is a win-win for everyone, from me to my crops to soil life. The military analogy doesn't work, because warriors and gardeners face opposite challenges. War is conflict, and people get into conflicts when they are competing for scarce resources, like oil or Taylor Swift tickets. In the garden, we're coping with excess. Zucchini is the classic example, but not the only one. When you're seduced by the botanical illustration and impulsively buy a packet of daikon seeds, then a few weeks later you have to figure out what to do with 75 giant purple radishes, guarding your stuff from outsiders is the least of your concerns. The bounty of the garden creates community rather than conflict. Free wood chips from Chip Drop are great mulch for perennial beds. The problem, again, is overabundance. It's not easy to use a whole truckload, so recipients post frantic messages in garden social media groups. Help! There's a mountain of wood chips in my driveway! Please come and take some! I think my Mini Cooper is under there. We show up with buckets, get some mulch, and make some friends. The need to share brings us together. So, of course, along with everyone else, warriors are welcome in my garden, as long as they don't want to trade places. I've already shared my brassicas with the local grasshopper community, but there's plenty of tomatoes and cucumbers. Judo gardening is a learning process. Next year, I'll add fortifications of floating row cover to deter the grasshoppers. Even if my gentle method of pest management isn't perfect, nowadays I can count on a huge midsummer hailstorm to wipe the slate clean and give me a fresh start with cool season crops. There's another alleged Chinese proverb about this. If you wish to be happy for a day, get drunk. But if you wish to be happy forever, plant a garden. The first option is tempting when the plagues of hail and locusts descend. But for enduring happiness, there's nothing like coming in from a hot, battered summer garden, going down to the cool basement, and recapturing the giddy optimism of spring by starting seeds for a whole new garden in the fall. Five Botanical Allies for Winter Wellness by Sarah Stewart Martinelli. And this is from Colorado Gardener, Harvest 2023 edition. If you want to have a garden that's both beautiful and useful, there are countless plants that can be strong botanical allies when dealing with the colds and flus of winter. Each of the below herbs can be easily dried by hanging, then stored for winter use to make teas. Even better, they can be blended to make an almost endless variety of personalized teas. All of these plants should be easy to find in the spring, and with minimal care should grace your garden for years to come. Enjoy their gifts. 1. Marshmallow, Althea officinalis. Easy to grow, traditional marshmallow makes a statement in the garden with its long stalks of soft, downy leaves and delicate light pink flowers. The dried leaves are full of mucilage and make an excellent remedy for irritated tissues of the digestive, respiratory, or urinary system. The plant needs moisture and sun. 2. Lemon balm, Melissa officinalis. With enthusiastic abundance, lemon balm will rampage through your garden like all of its other mint cousins. It's a good thing the plant is so attractive, aromatic, and useful. Dried lemon balm leaves create a tea that has both antibacterial and antiviral actions, and additionally helps to soothe the nervous and digestive systems. For a relaxing, soothing, and health-promoting tea, lemon balm is a staple of the winter tea store. Plant it where you can appreciate its exuberant personality. 3. Hyssop, Hyssopus officinalis. Hyssop is one of the lesser-known herbs because it's rarely used for culinary or ornamental purposes, but it's a must-have for its winter medicine. Another member of the mint family, hyssop makes a tasty tea that is useful to alleviate the symptoms of cold, flu, congestion, and cough. Add honey to the tea for a soothing brew that will soothe a sore throat and calm a cough. 4. Rosemary, Rosmarinus officinalis. Although rosemary can be a bit tough to grow in Colorado due to our dry and quickly changing climate, it's the perfect herb to grow in a pot and bring indoors for the winter months. Use the needle-like leaves, either fresh or dried, for a great-tasting tea that is both delicious and healing. The antibacterial properties make it a perfect ally for any cold or flu blend, and these strong aromatics help to clear congestion. 5. Echinacea, Echinacea purpurea. Nothing beats echinacea in the garden. With tall, showy purple flowers, echinacea puts on a glorious display of color during the heat of the summer. Though the roots are the most effective, the leaves can be dried for a tea to brew at the first hint of illness. Echinacea helps boost the immune system and has a mild, pleasant flavor. Plantoids and Grobots, Robot Explorers Inspired by Plants, by R. Gary Raham. And this is from Colorado Gardener, Harvest 2023 edition. I confess, even biologist gardeners can be a little zoocentric, biased toward creatures with mostly organized brains that move around, doing interesting things. We tend to think about plants as attractive and useful objects, or tasty consumables that squelch hunger pangs at mealtimes. We fail to remember that plants are living brethren that have run evolution's survival gauntlet for eons, using, even pioneering, many of the same biochemical pathways we enjoy. Plants, rooted in place, just live in the slow lane. Now, however, a few biologists like Barbara Mazzolet are beginning to try and see the world from a plant's perspective. The result may soon be robots that explore the universe in a much more phytocentric way. Barbara Mazzoli holds the title of Associate Director for Robotics and Director of the Bio-Inspired Soft Robotics Laboratory at the Istituto Italiano di Tecnologia, located in Pontedera, Italy. In the early 2010s, Mazzoli was excited about the efforts of engineers to create robots inspired by nature. These robots took the form of creatures like geckos, dragonflies, and octopuses, all animal forms that could walk, swim, or fly across assorted landscapes. But Mazzoli realized that plants had unique skills of their own. They possess root systems that actively explore the soil for water and nutrients, using far less energy than worms, moles, or drill bits. Why not design robots based on plants' unique brand of intelligence? Yes, intelligence. The concept is still somewhat controversial, but not as outrageous as one might think. Researchers František Baluska and Stefano Mancuso argue that plants possess a plant-specific intelligence with which they manipulate both their abiotic and biotic environment, including climate patterns and whole ecosystems. In his 2013 book, What a Plant Knows, Daniel Chamovitz discussed many of the ways plants interact with us and other living creatures to promote their own survival. Daughter plants, Cuscuta pentagona, for example, must find tomato or other plants to parasitize, or they die. They do so by growing toward the odor of their prey in lazy spirals that eventually contacts a host stem. Willow trees, injured by tent caterpillars, release chemicals that serve as alarm signals for other downwind plants. Although plants don't have eyes, they do have primitive photoreceptor systems that lock them into the same kind of circadian rhythms we notice when we experience jet lag. Mimosa pudica, the so-called sensitive plant, along with certain other plants, respond dramatically to touch by collapsing their leaves quickly. But they can learn to squelch that response if poked repeatedly with no adverse results. And mineral-starved plants like the Venus flytrap use trigger hairs that depolarize like a nerve cell when touched by an insect. As a result, lobe-shaped, nastily barbed leaves snap shut on prey to leach them of valuable nitrogen compounds. In Planta Sapiens, The New Science of Plant Intelligence, Paco Calvo, with writer Natalie Lawrence, make their case that studying plant neurobiology is a real thing. They say exploring plants' ways of doing things, seeing into their worlds, potentially as active participants in these projects, not just as passive tools, can help us explore worlds beyond Earth. This idea, of course, leads directly to Mazzoli and her plantoid robots. Exactly how would such a robotic device work? Dario Floriano and Nicola Nosengo describe Mazzoli's work in their article, The Plant-Inspired Robots That Could Colonize Mars, adapted from their 2022 book, Tales from a Robotic World, How Intelligent Machines Will Shape Our Future. Mazzoli argues that plant roots perform two jobs exceptionally well. They anchor and support plants, while also probing through soil in search of water and nutrients. Robots with similar skills might serve as excellent explorers on planets like Mars, with sandy soil and low gravity. Mazzolet envisions a probe striking Mars like a dart. The impact would dig a small hole in the planetary surface, inserting a seed just deep enough in the soil, not too different from what happens to real seeds. From there, a robotic root would start to grow by pumping water into a series of modular small chambers that would expand and apply pressure on the soil. Mazzolet knew she had to figure out how to create a growing robot, a hardware problem, such that its roots could collect and share information and use it to make collective decisions, a software problem. The growth mechanism, rather like a 3D printer that can add material continuously behind the root tip as it probes the soil, works its way into natural fractures. A plastic wire is wrapped around a reel stored in the robot's central stem and is pulled toward the tip by an electric motor. Inside the tip, another motor forces the wire into a hole heated by the resistor, then pushes it out, heated and sticky, behind the tip. The structure behind the moving tip hardens to become a solid, tubular structure. Growbots, also plant-like robots, work against gravity and probe space for an anchor point, like daughter plants. The upper trunk of a growbot might extend soft, foldable leaves filled with a synthetic chlorophyll that could trap light for energy. Together, plantoid robots and growbots might even be able to build infrastructure on a planet ahead of colonization efforts. The technology isn't there yet for creations like these, but Mazzolet does have the attention of the European Space Agency. Engineers are becoming less blind, as should we, to the talents of plants. The result could help us explore alien worlds with plant-like efficiency. The Super Genius Planting Method by Bob Nold. And this is from Colorado Gardener, Harvest 2023 edition. Many years ago, I was an advocate of a method of planting, which involved removing all the soilless mix from the root balls of nursery-grown plants and planting the almost bare root plants directly into the garden. The idea being that, with the roots in instant contact with the garden soil, they would have an easier time growing into that soil and become established more quickly. When this method was first proposed, the reactions were, to say the least, extremely negative, and it is mildly hysterical to see that this technique is now considered standard practice. There are drawbacks. The first one is that it's work, and the second is that when the soil mix is washed off, the roots are sort of all bound together. So even though the roots have instant contact with the garden soil, they're positioned in an unnatural way, like a squid with all its tentacles stuck together. After considerable thought and some appeal to the heavens, I came up with an alternative method, which requires almost no work, which I've dubbed the Super Genius Method, very modestly naming it after myself. The only things you need are extra nursery pots, a suitable medium, and, I'm sorry to say this, patience. Every plant I buy or transplant after the spring solstice is subjected to the method. All you do is take a purchased or transplanted plant and repot it into a larger size pot. Fill the area around the root ball or transplant with a coarse mix, water it regularly, and within a week or so, maybe a month for severely root-bound plants, there will be roots growing into the coarse mix, and the plant can be planted into the garden. Of course, it will still need watering, but with the roots growing in the right direction, out and down, the success rate, even in the hottest days of summer, is considerable. That's it. Once the roots have left the root ball, the plant can be planted, and the leftover mix, don't pour all of that into the planting hole, reused for the next batch of plants you buy. Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener. My name is Christy McGowan.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.